Chapter 7. You did not see the Hall of Judgment until you were close to it. That was one of the surprising things about the ultimate home of the Adeptus Arbites, whose palaces throughout the Imperium were often the largest and most imposing constructions on any world. On Terra, however, the haunt of the most senior judges of all did not tower over its surroundings like the Imperial Palace or the Nexus Axiomatic, for it was sited in a region of already gargantuan administratum spires, and was far older than any of them. As if preferring to slump in their shadows, the hall's onyx-black walls crept up almost unawares, before suddenly looming over you in a glittering facade of semi-mirrored darkness. Its sheer, steep sides were carved with the likeness of hook-beaked eagles, staring with obsidian-hard gazes through the drifting smog. The symbol of the Arbites, a clenched gauntlet holding a pair of scales, was engraved in lozenges 20 meters high on every facing panel. Pale blue lumens underlit the overhanging eaves of the great halls, interconnected by tightly crenellated walkways. A few scrawny pinnacles rose up into the higher airs, studded with advanced comms nodes and sensor spikes, but the greater mass of the place was set heavy, tomb-like in aspect. A warren of dense, lightless coffins, spreading like an infection through the surrounding urban zones. They said that the hall had been delved far deeper than it had been raised high, and that its true size was carefully hidden to avoid giving away the scale of the Arbites' grip on temporal power. They said that its jails still housed prisoners from the oldest ages of humanity, kept alive through their madness and decay to rave secrets into the ears of patient examiners. They said that there were secret courts buried at the very base of its internal labyrinth, in which the face of the Emperor himself would appear, reflected dimly in tarnished mirrors, to pass judgment over the living, just as he did for the dead. They said so many things about the Hall of Judgment that some of them surely must have been true. Search lumens swept across its many facets endlessly, tracing pools of hard white light over glossy, razor-wire-topped battlements. Hunter-killers swarmed in packs, hovering low over guarded landing stages. Its cavernous hangar moors were clogged with incoming and departing craft of all shapes and sizes. Windowless felon carriers, talon-like scrutiny gunships, gaudy formal transports bedecked with images of blindfolded angels. Every ship was tracked coming in, and every ship was tracked going out. Servo-skulls flocked like wingless sparrows around each ingress point and lumen bank, trailing their spinal segment chains behind them as they darted and wheeled. At ground level, the many gates were all of the same design, high Gothic arches raised atop long, wide stairways. Crowds were forever braving the gun sights of the enforcers to climb those stairs, whether to report wrongdoing, to plead innocence before the austere pulpit of the magistrates within, or perhaps to inquire after the fate of a relative or friend hauled into the cells. Such was the scale of the place that even finding the right gate could be the work of months. Once inside, navigating through the coal-black warrens was a task of similarly daunting magnitude. Hundreds of thousands of scholar adepts shuffled through the innards of the hall, its subordinate chambers and its auxiliary precincts, ferrying documents between courtrooms and investigation silos, shadowed at all times by the ever-present enforcers. The reputation of the hall was so fearful that the mere mention of it was often enough to cow the renegade and reform the sinful. Its inhabitants were the ultimate guardians of the Lex, that impenetrable thicket of laws and precedents that bound every living human so tightly that even a scream was impossible. As a keen student of the law herself, Spinoza had always admired its agents. They had a purity of purpose about them that made them worthy of respect. Less numerous than the Astra Militarum, less powerful than the Adeptus Astartes, less specialized than the Inquisition. Nonetheless, for the average citizen, the Arbites were perhaps the most enduring and potent symbol of the Emperor's power, the one they were most likely to come into contact with or know just a little about. Now dressed in the black armor plate of a proctor, with Hegane kitted out as her attendant enforcer, she had a flavor of what it meant to wear the uniform in public. As the two of them strode up the high stairs towards the gate plaza, the many citizens clustered around her scampered to get out of the way. Unlike her Inquisition rosette, which only generated terror when glimpsed up close, this night-dark kit, all heavy angles and exaggerated, ostentatious weaponry, was a clenched fist crunched to the face, unsubtle and remorseless. The thick plates were unpowered, making her movements ponderous in comparison with her usual physical fluency. Even Hegain, whose standard stormtrooper carapace plate was of much higher quality, looked like he was wading through mud. "I do not, as it is, much like the looks of all this here," he voxed to her on their closed comm system. "I know what you mean," Spinoza said, forging a laborious path up to the gate level before striding out across the plaza. "Has there been some triggering event? Something to provoke them?"
"Nothing at all. Not a thing that I've been aware of," said Hegain, grimly, keeping close, his hand resting on the handle of his shock baton.
The mob was restive and numerous, pushing up towards the arch like a surge tide before breaking and ebbing under the attentions of the enforcers lined up ahead. Some of them seemed to be shouting, though the words were lost in the general roar of noise and movement. Several gunships dropped low, blasting their turbines straight into the thickest knots of bodies, but even that aggressive move failed to drive them back by much. As Spinoza and Hegain neared the gates, where the enforcers waited with weapons drawn, the air of ugliness got more intense.
"It is like an illness," Spinoza mused, studying them all from behind the anonymity of her full-face helm. "They should be driven from the gates."
But that might not have been easy, not without considerable violence, and even then it was a large crowd to cow. For now, the assembled security forces seemed content to hold the hall's perimeter, merely preventing things from becoming worse. In all likelihood, watch officers were using servo skulls to pinpoint the ringleaders, ready for surgical strikes from the gunships if needed. The Arbites would not want to provoke an all-out riot on their doorstep if they could help it. Better to let the cattle burn off their energy now and enact considered retribution later.
"Almost there," said Hegain, shoving aside a robed, face-swaddled woman who hadn't seen him until too late.
She whirled to face him, her eyes flashing angrily before realizing who had pushed her. Even then she held her ground, staring at the two of them as if they were the worst devils of the outer dark, her fists balled.
"And glad of it, I will say," he muttered, pressing on.
"This is madness."
Spinoza barged more citizens aside to reach the open ground before the lines of enforcers.
"Now we see how good the information from Revre was," she murmured.
Maintaining her stride, she approached the regulator in charge of the defence lines and snappily displayed her credentials.
"What is this all about?" she demanded.
The officer made the Aquila. Despite his bulk and armour, he gave off a faint air of indecision.
"Unknown, Proctor," he replied,
his voice muffled behind the wadding of his helm.
"Awaiting orders to disperse."
Spinoza glanced back over her shoulder. It looked like even more were coming to join the mobs, streaming out from the ranked hab towers beyond.
"Do not wait too long, Regulator," she said, taking her ident wafer back.
"No, Proctor,"
he replied, distracted by the gathering unrest, his trigger finger looking itchy.
"In his service."
She passed through the line of troopers, Hegain close at her heels. Once across the gate threshold, under the shadow of the yawning arch, it became easier to move. The giant Arbites sigil hanging over them seemed to stare defiantly outward, as if daring the mob to follow them in. They would not have got far, had they tried to, but the fact that they were there at all was concerning. Spinoza and Hegain moved within the precincts of the hall proper and presented credentials at three further security cordons before a pair of heavy iron doors swung open. After that, their surroundings sunk into that ambience so familiar in all courtrooms of the Imperium. The musty, mouldering air, the oppressive lightning, the muffled squeaks of boots on high, polished floors. Several squads of enforcers jogged past them, heading up to the gates to reinforce the perimeter. All saluted as they went by. Two servo skulls with high-range oculi hummed overhead soon afterwards, heading the same way. One of them scanned Spinoza, presumably an automatic process, and picked up the subtle response systems embedded in her armour. Unperturbed, the skull bobbed onwards, its grav unit whining.
"This equipment is adequate, at least,"
Spinoza remarked as they kept walking.
"Irunian works hard," Hegain agreed. "He will be pleased to hear of it when we return."
Without advanced planning and access to restricted schematics, finding a path through the warrens beyond would have been nigh impossible. The corridors soon branched, then branched again, splitting up into dozens of different subterranean avenues. Every surface was highly polished and smelled of chemical cleaners.
Every door was iron-barred and unmarked, save for small cryptic iron glyphs set into the lintels. Adepts scurried all over the place, hauling materials from the repositories to the court chambers and back again, their gaunt faces hidden under the ubiquitous scholars' cowls. It quickly became clammy, and the grind of atmospheric processes made the floors thrum. Once within the steel trap of outer security, few dared challenge a proctor and her escort, and the numerous armed guards made the Aquila respectfully whenever they were encountered. Only the automatic scanning systems continued to challenge them, which happened at regular intervals as they progressed further inside. They ignored the corridors leading to the courtrooms and jails, as well as those descending to the interrogation suites and holding cells, but followed Revray's directions towards the third great portion of the hall's interior, the investigation archives. Over the millennia of the hall's ceaseless activity, these repositories had become truly immense, filling chamber after chamber with tight-packed files and vellum bundles. Some sections were devoted to the accounts of notable judgments, others to academic tomes of esoteric jurisprudence, yet more to the mundane business of recording the minute-by-minute conduct of active enforcement work. As ever, the volume of material soon outpaced the ability of any single administration to process, and so a secondary industry of intensive tome mining had sprung up within the hall's cavernous vaults. Whole branches of its standing army of scholiasts were devoted to mounting extensive expeditions into the furthest and oldest reaches of the lower levels, set on uncovering lost jewels of wisdom, or relocating the corpuses of the revered foundational judges. Every senior official of the Adeptus Arbites, wherever they were stationed in the Imperium, had the ambition to make the pilgrimage to this place just once in order to assist this effort, perhaps to rediscover something truly significant in the deeps, maybe to learn some hidden truth of the Lex, or possibly just to breathe in the leathery air of the sealed chambers and gaze in rapture along the cases of ancient, flaking spines. It was even rumoured that from time to time some of the most fanatical of them took up permanent habitation in the furthest reaches of the archive pits, eking out a famished existence in the dust and darkness before they finally expired among their beloved parchment scraps, surrounded by burned-out candles and the scrawl of hasty, obsessive notes. Of course, most of the archives were neither as important nor as well hidden as those legendary screeds. Records stretching back over the past few centuries were still reasonably accessible and frequently made use of. Hall 26 of level 458 was virtually at the repository's surface stratum, though even using Revray's data, it still required a long hike to find it. The bustle of the upper corridors slowly receded and the lumens dipped even lower, until the two of them were trudging through a twilight underworld of stacked vellum walls, each volume crammed onto iron shelves that seemed to stretch on forever.
"Folio 33," Hegain mumbled, scanning with a handheld auger to gain a fix on the correct location. "Folio 59. Hell's below. Are these not in any kind of order?"
Spinoza took in the surroundings carefully. Gravloaders had been stationed at the intersection of every major tome casing. Boxy cogitator stations dotted the floor level. On the edge of hearing, she could detect other scholars at work in the far distance, their taps and scrapes echoing along the long avenues. Her helm's tactical display picked up the intermittent flicker of servo-skull movement. Even here, even in these barren reaches, there were still eyes to see and ears to hear.
"This is what we want," she said, using Revray's information to home in on a sealed set of records.
They came to a halt in front of a barred metal section, behind which steel crates had been stacked. Spinoza scanned the catalogue panels with her own auger unit. After confirming the codes against Revray's figures, she applied a lock cycler to the bars. With a rusty clunk, they slid open, revealing the crates within. Hegain pulled one out, then tried Revray's seal codes, one by one, until he found a match. The lid of the crate eased open, revealing an empty interior.
"Anything at all?" asked Spinoza, peering inside.
Hegain rummaged for a moment, using his helm visor to scan for trace elements.
"There was material placed in this, yes," he said, running his fingers along the bottom. "Standard archive vellum. Very much gone now."
They pulled out another crate, and then another. All were empty. They worked their way down, looking for records filed in the adjacent cases, and found nothing. These were communications made at the highest level, Spinoza said, reaching for another crate. Few would dare to destroy them, I think, without similarly high-level authorization.
The physical copies, yes, said Hegain, leaning against the casing. But Revray, if I recall it, gave us scan codes, did he not?
The same, in all likelihood, said Spinoza. But we have come this far. We must be thorough.
They replaced the crates and resealed the casings. Then they trudged down the long avenue towards the nearest cogitator station. It was a huge, old contraption with corrosion-spotted heat sinks and a smeared angle-poise viewer lens. Heavy cabling snaked from its rear down into the floor, where it joined clustered wiring from the other linked units within the hall. Spinoza took a seat before the terminal and activated the interrogation unit. The machine spirit coughed, spat, then blurted into life. She pulled out her type slate, then adjusted the lens so the lift projector lined up with her eyes.
Record access, she said, speaking into the vox grill and holding her badge of status up against the site verifier.
The cogitator thought about that for a while, clattering internally, before a glowing line of runes chanted across the lens.
Welcome, Proctor. Security code, please.
Spinoza entered the first of Revray's figures, causing the cogitator to clatter some more.
No records held under that file heading. Do you have another request?
Spinoza halted the recall and entered a real text query.
Have prior records on this topic been removed?
The cogitator ran the logic, and the transistors along its back flashed as power was drawn to the calculus engine.
Yes, Proctor. By whom? Undetermined, Proctor. Do you have another request?
Spinoza entered more of Revray's codes, using each one to interrogate a different archive silo. The answer was always the same.
No records held under that file heading. Do you have another request?
In every case, the cogitator was prepared to divulge that the cases had once been populated, but had no data on the reason for them being emptied. It was a clean removal with no omissions. This was a dead end. If any link had once existed between the Provost Marshal and the Speaker's office, it had been terminated some time ago, and all traces of it expunged. Hegain began to grow restive. He had been pacing around, keeping an eye on the avenues ahead and behind. They were all deserted, but that could change at any time.
Details of any further catalogue items in this silo referring to representatives of the Speaker of the Chartist Captains, Spinoza finally voxed at the grill for completeness.
Another round of clicking and whirring.
None held, Proctor. Do you have another request?
If I may, Lord, Hegain ventured, peering out into the darkness. I believe we have all we're going to get.
Spinoza ignored him. She had one access code left, the last one Revray had given her before his mind had begun to fade. It had not been a pleasant task, nor an honourable one, leveraging that wretch. It would be better to get something out of it, making the deed a little less sordid than the pointless murder of a weak man.
Almost there, she said,
inputting the final sequence. The cogitator rattled. It clunked. Then it stopped. For a moment there was nothing, just the creak of the shelves around them. Then, without warning, it shut down entirely. The meagre lumens hung far above went out, turning the gloom into perfect darkness. From somewhere far away, right on the edge of detection, an alarm clanged into life. Spinoza smiled dryly.
I did not think he had it in him, she said to herself.
Then she got up, pulling her hand cannon from its holster. Hegain was already moving, stowing his shock baton and pulling out an auto pistol. Both activated their night sights.
Forgive me, Sergeant, said Spinoza, breaking into a stride and heading swiftly back the way they had come. I fear that was one code too many.
Nothing to forgive, Lord, replied Hegain, chortling. I don't like to hide if I can help it. Best to fight harder on 2 feet, you think, yes?
Spinoza remembered Crowell's orders. We have no defence once we are exposed.
Just maintain your cover, said Spinoza, picking up the pace as the alarms grew louder. We get out alive, then we worry about what comes next.
From the terminus berths, Crowell and Bajan took a mag train further inside the Nexus.
Gorgias hung low over Kral's shoulder, silent and subservient. As they went, the opulence of the interior gradually unfurled around them. The elevated track wound through a series of halls, each one larger than the one before, all well lit and shining from expensive equipment and glossy fittings. The floors were white marble, the staff dressed in crisp blue tabards. The mounted Imperial Aquila was present, blindly overseeing the activity on the floors below, but not as often as the symbol of the Chartists, which adorned almost every surface. There should have been little surprise about this. All knew that the Chartists were phenomenally wealthy. Unlike the military orders of the Imperium, which were forever run ragged trying to police its long frontiers, the merchants had it good, here at its centre, where all coin eventually found its home. Kral found himself wondering what the average Militarum trooper, stranded out in the freezing, mud-clogged trenches of the main combat zones, would have felt if they knew what their sacrifice was buying. Not that any of them would ever get this far to see it. There was a reason why the Nexus guarded its perimeter so tightly. "What is that?" Kral asked, as the mag train glided through another large hall. The track was over 10 meters up, sending them far over the heads of the adepts labouring below. In this chamber, enormous crystal-flex screens had been erected, on which cartographic symbols glowed softly. A complex web of trade routes overlaid one another, marked by status runes and trigonometric equations. Every so often, the lattice would update, ticking over to register the arrival of another big convoy or the completion of a major contract. Most of the data screens depicted local systems, just a few warp stages across, and here the level of information was impressive, a gently scrolling list of manifolds and fulfillments, placed orders and newly launched hulls. On the largest, though, the one that dominated the centre of the hall, things were more schematic. It was impossible not to recognise the straggling swirl of the Western Galactic Arm, marked with Terra at its centre. That map was familiar to any child of a good scholar, as were the many system names that were learned by rote. It was a figurative diagram, of course. There was no way in a universe dominated by astropathic communication and the vagaries of warp travel to generate real-time snapshots of every fleet movement and every landing. The schematic of the Imperium was by necessity half allegorical, with the usual astrological symbols mixed in with the astronomical ones, tied together with benedictions to the Emperor as navigator and old injunctions against the caprice of the void's tides. And yet there was a broad picture to be read there, something that could be interpreted meaningfully, something that was clearly evolving. A long swath of that map was marked in red, tearing across the northern galactic sectors like a cut made by a jagged blade. Within that zone, whole systems throbbed with alert runes, their trade routes and warp conduits darkened, faded or erased. Bajan followed Kral's gaze.
"The anomalous regions?" he asked coolly. "There is some uncertainty. As with all such things, the schema is only a rough indication. We compiled distress signals, regular fleet bulletins, the usual sources. Those systems are marked as lost."
"Not lost, Inspector. Uncertain. There is some doubt as to their current status and reporting reliability."
The mag train brushed along, heading steadily towards the exit portal at the far end of the hall. Below, activity continued much as it must always have done. A steady, professional bustle of scholiasts and analysers bent low over tabulators and scriven notes. Chronometers ticked away on the walls, each fashioned to look like the centrepiece of a ship's command bridge, marking the estimated local time-date benchmark at major muster centres. No one seemed concerned.
"But the pattern is immense," said Kral, unable to take his eyes from the map.
"And it begins in the Ocularis Terribus. Has this information been passed on to the Council?"
"Of course," said Bajan.
"Everything is communicated in the usual way. I can show you the records if you're interested."
Kral looked hard at the signals adept. There was a faint tightness around his mouth, a slight tension around his eyes. Nothing unusual when faced with a member of the Inspectorate of Shipping. Was he really that relaxed about it? Had he been ordered to be?
"What response did you get?"
"I would not know, Inspector," Bajan said.
The mag train passed into another tunnel, and the brightness of the hall faded into the flashing lumen pattern of the Nexus's interior.
That is something the Speaker's office may be able to determine, were you able to ask them. But you will understand from your time in the scheduling stations that anomalies come and go. Sometimes they're very large, sometimes less so. We plan for them. We accommodate them, just as always.
Kral settled back into his clamshell seat. There was something surreal about the complacency. Still, these people knew their business. He himself had not been on a truly long void passage for a very long time, and could hardly be held up as an expert on such things.
"The galaxy must be compassed," he said, echoing the Chartist's motto.
"Quite." They moved on, travelling through more cartographic halls, then narrower chambers that appeared entirely devoted to enormous ledgers of goods and tithes. The scale of operations became somewhat numbing, a constant buzz of computation and calculation, never-ending in scope, remorseless in intensity. Most of it was utterly impenetrable to outsiders, an arcane business of profit prediction and goods distribution conducted over truly awe-inspiring distances and timeframes. These were powerful people. In some respects, these were the most powerful people in the Imperium.
"Here we are," Bajan said, getting up.
The mag train glided to a halt. They disembarked and entered a glass-roofed atrium. Water, uncontaminated by the look of it, ran from fountains into long ornamental pools. The adepts shuffling across the slate floors here were senior, clad in fine multi-hued robes and wearing elaborate headdresses. Bajan took Kral into a palatial office, one that overlooked the cityscape beyond. That meant they were very high up, in the cluster of towers at the Nexus's summit, and the Habspire stretched off in a cool haze of grey, bleached by the diffuse light of the cloud-barred sun. Black specks of air traffic flitted past in silent mobs, like billows of dust in the wind.
"Drink, Inspector?"
Bajan asked, heading to a heavy-set Alwood desk with mournful caryatids for legs. Kral could have killed for one, but Calavine, unfortunately, was teetotal. Or rather, had been teetotal prior to his accident on the landing stages coming in from the Eleusine orbital transfer platform. Such a tragedy, that.
"No," he said, taking the seat set opposite the desk. "We'll get started."
"Very well," said Bajan.
"I have prepared a selection of recent..." "I did not come all this way to scrutinise material you have already sanitised."
Calavine had been an irritable man. Mimicking him proved rather enjoyable.
"I have questions of my own."
Bajan smiled tartly.
"I see. You keep accurate records. We pride ourselves on that. And your responsibilities include the Laurentis subsector."
"They do, among many others."
"Are you familiar with the name Naaman Vinal?"
Bajan frowned.
"I do not believe so."
"He was a rogue trader."
"Then, as you know, he would not fall under our auspices."
"Interesting.
He thought differently."
Kral leaned forward, resting his elbows on his knees. The movement made his joints ache, but it was an affectation of Calavine's.
"He was in communication with your department regularly. Why was that, do you think?"
Bajan's right eyelid flickered, just by a fraction.
"You have the records of this. Answer the question." "I do not understand, Inspector. How does this relate to our scheduled business?"
"It does not." Bajan looked properly confused now.
"I had anticipated..." Kral curled his fingers.
"Tell me then about deposit account 38765, registered at Borlatovois Accumulators."
Now Bajan looked scared. "None of this relates to our work here."
"I know, Adept. That is the point. It is a very well-stocked account, for all that, far in excess of what might be expected for a private citizen in the service of the throne. Its owner is Gerhardus Eolf, of course, and as you know, no such person exists."
Bajan's mouth tightened. "I have prepared reports on shipping patterns."
Kral ignored him.
"You hid your tracks fairly well. The path back to you is convoluted. 9 registered holding vehicles, of which the last, Aleto Urban, is entirely legal.
If I did not have good forensic scholars in my departamento, you might have got away with it entirely.
Bajan leaned forward a fraction, his hand creeping towards a drawer. Gorgias noticed and rose up threateningly, needle gun extending.
I wouldn't, Kral recommended, staying perfectly immobile. My skull has an erratic temperament, but a good aim.
Bajan's hand froze. His expression remained blank enough, but Kral was experienced enough to perceive the frantic calculations going on behind his eyes.
Really, I do not. This should be the end for you, Harker Bajan, Kral said. Filtering that much coin from your oversight contracts is just greedy, and I doubt even the most jaded overseer would be able to ignore it once my report hit their desk. But you are in luck. Let us start again, shall we? With the things I am truly interested in. Why was Naaman Vinal in communication with your office?
Bajan's eyes flickered as he tried to keep up with what was going on. After a moment of thought, he seemed to understand and slumped back in his chair.
Is this testimony protected under inspectorate confidentiality? Yes. Not that you're in a position to demand much protection. And my name will be kept out of it? Start talking. I do not have infinite patience. I do not know, Bajan said. Honestly, I do not. The canisters were prepared from astropathic accounts and kept sealed. They were sent higher up. I only supervised the transmission. On whose orders? It had Ultra 6 classification. That is not questioned. I assume all the way to the top. I was given the name Cassandra Dluka, Kral said. She used to work here. I don't know if she's even still alive. The incoming register address might have been hers, but that means little. We oversaw onward movement, kept the canisters safe and off book, then cleaned up the acceptance records. Is this normal procedure? It's not as uncommon as you might think. Then I'll need access to those files.
Bajan laughed, more nervously than with any kind of humour.
You are operating well above your clearance now, Inspector. That is hardly your judgment to make. Where can I find them? For all the good it will do you, they were signed off by the Ninth Magister Calculo Horarium. You had project codes when processing this work, said Kral, reaching for a data slug and handing it to Bajan. I'll need those, too.
Bajan took up the slug, looked at it for a moment, then grudgingly entered a series of digits.
I don't want my name associated with this, he said again.
Kral smiled. You're consistent, I'll give you that. He took the slug back.
Under the regulations of your office, as you well know, your position is now forfeit. The regulators at Bolat are not sympathetic people. If I were you, I'd find some reason to get off-world. Then I'd stay there. You might even be able to access some of your funds if you move quickly enough, as I'll be busy with this magister, assuming, that is, you've given me the right names. If not, then we'll be talking again soon.
No, it's all correct. Bajan looked miserable. But my family.
Take them, too. Consider this a lesson in morality. Learn from it. Cleave to a better understanding of his example, and you may yet make something of your avaricious life.
Bajan made to rise, then hesitated, eyeing Gorgias warily.
So, what are you going to do now, Inspector? You can't possibly make use of this information. Just one for the files, is it?
Kral rose, ignoring the spasm up his spine. He had a long journey ahead of him now, and his mind was already turning to what must come next.
That's right, Adept, he said. Just one for the files.